Come and dream with me.
Hello, welcome to What Do You Want to Watch? The Explosion Network's premium media podcast. Every week we get together to talk about movies, TV, and online content and help you answer the question, how difficult is it to read an envelope? Very difficult, apparently. I'm your host, Ashley Hobley. Join me today, Dylan Blight.
How difficult is it to open an envelope?
Depends on, you know, a lot of factors. What do you got in your hands? What do you need to use your hands for at the time, you know?
God, that's the big question, you know?
I mean, I guess they'd have to use reasonably strong adhesive to make sure that they don't accidentally get opened prior to, you know.
Well, I heard they use Velcro for John Cena's envelope, so.
Just stick it on the wire on the front.
Yep.
All right, on today's episode, we'll be talking about what's our watch history, going over some film news, which is mostly just our recap of the Academy Awards, giving some thumbs trailers and giving you this week's top three. Kick things off, I've got the opportunity to watch the last four episodes of Invincible Season 2, Part 2, which is starting to release this coming Thursday. Of course, Invincible, the hit animated series about Mark Grayson, young superhero called Invincible. I know I'm explaining it. I feel like most people watched Invincible as a shit. obviously, Dylan reviewed the first part of season two and kind of gave it a 7 out of 10, said it was like a bit of a slow burn start of the season, although set up for what was to come. And that's definitely the case. The second half goes a little bit smoother, or like hits a few more highs than the first half of the season. Not everything is necessarily paid off, but there's definitely a lot of progression of the overall story, but then also a lot of payoffs for certain elements of the season. I feel like they set up a big bad in the first half of the season that they don't get back to till quite late in the season, would be my only criticism. And you know, the show is also trying to juggle like a very large ensemble cast of characters. I don't know if they do everybody service, but they do a fantastic job of like highlighting the characters that, you know, they choose to highlight. I think Rex Bload is a character who I don't think anybody would have expected to get the arc that he kind of gets in the second half of the season, and become a much more beloved character, you know, after being kind of a jerk. all the way through the series so far. Yeah, really fantastic. The animation, obviously, you know, animation's fantastic. It's like, yeah, if you're in this show for big bloody battles and gore and that kind of stuff, you're going to get it in the second half of the season. I think the arc that Mark takes in the rest of the season is really interesting, with him both personally and like as a superhero. Kind of dealing with the ethics of some of his actions and the relationships he's holding, and kind of delving into, I guess, the work-life balance of being a superhero, which is like, you know, I don't think is necessarily being explored in a lot of superhero medium recently. So that's quite interesting. Yeah, I again don't want to spoil a lot, but there's a lot to enjoy here. Only an extra four episodes, so it's like, but they're full, very meaty, very dense episodes. You know, there's a lot going on. I do enjoy, there's a lot of meta humor, including one part where they go to Comic-Con and like they talk about the medium of animation and like how it's so difficult, and like sometimes they'll just, you know, they'll cut corners by like having people talk with their mouth covered and that kind of thing, or shoot them from behind so you don't have to see their mouths moving and that kind of stuff. Very music kind of meta humor in there as well. So yeah, check out Invincible Season 2 Part 2. It's starting to release this Thursday, and then each episode is releasing each week, you know. So very keen, excited for whenever Season 3 will be out, probably in 2026, I'm guessing, at the rate they're making these. So yeah, that's Invincible. And that's kind of everything I watched this year. Let's move into the mandatory Netflix segment of the show. It's been a slow week this week. But we both found time to watch The Program, Cons, Cults, and Kidnapping, which is a documentary about a person who went to...
Ivy Ridge Academy. Academy at Ivy Ridge.
Yeah, who went to the Academy at Ivy Ridge, which is a school for bad children.
School for naughty kids.
Yeah, like a... I can't... Again, my mind is blanking as to the terms that they used throughout the series, but like essentially she was
troubled teens
program school, part of a massive troubled teens industry, but pretty much documenting her experience in this school and the pretty much trauma that she experienced at the hands of the people running it, from the extent that, you know, she was ostensibly kidnapped from her previous school, thrown in the program, was not allowed to leave. They were constantly kept inside at all times. Some of the stuff that they like talk about is pretty horrific, to the extent where they're running, it's almost like a cult, but not for the children inside the school, but for the parents, and trying to keep them, keeping their kids in the program so that they keep paying for their tuition or like housing or whatever you want to describe it as. And like them trying to ostensibly brainwash these kids into becoming better, I guess, in quotes, people in society. Very fascinating documentary with, you know, lots of like obviously very personal documentary. The filmmaker obviously involved in having to deal with this trauma, and is very much her goal was ultimately to convince her father that what she was telling him was true, and like that was like her main goal of this story, of making this movie. And then it becomes a much bigger thing, and like it's crazy that they're walking in the actual school because it was shut down and they pretty much just left everything. It's like the thing was shut down, everybody just walked out of the building, and everything was abandoned. So there's like all this paperwork and stuff that's left on the ground that the people have been sorting through and trying to help other people who have been through the program and that kind of stuff. It's like, it's crazy. Dylan, what did you think of The Program?
Yeah, I thought it was really good because it was different. It had like had a indie filmmaker flair to it, I think, by having the I can't remember what's the girl's name? Catherine Kubler. Who like she's front and center as the, you know, the main person in the doco, gathered these group together, that's doing the interviews, that her father, you know, as you just said, like trying to get basically her father to understand and all this sort of stuff. But yeah, no, she's the director of it all as well. And I looked her up afterwards because I was just so interested, like she just seemed to have such a lively personality and everything, you know, on screen, that on in this doco, that I was like, what's she been doing like after, like what's the everything else, because
yeah,
you hear her hint at like what she's been doing. She got into like media and like advertising and won awards for like doing some stuff for, I can't remember what it was, there was some big thing she did for like a movie or something that she won awards
she for, did so. Behind the scenes for Mission Impossible Fallout.
Well, she did, she has a picture of Tom Cruise on her Instagram because I scrolled through her Instagram too. Yeah, so I think that's the thing that stood out to me, was like just as a product watching this documentary compared to most of the Netflix documentaries, it didn't have that typical Netflix produced doco feel, which is sometimes fine for a lot of the Netflix docos, especially something I want to watch while I'm doing something else, whatever, it's fine. But this one just felt like it had a lot more character and flavor to it, a lot more behind it, which makes sense when the person's so heavily involved in it and it's their story and everything. So as a story, I think there's a lot more to this. And I think this doco does a really good job at keeping it grounded at the core people involved, her and her friends, her and her people that she knows, and the few people she investigates outside of that to talk about and gives an overview. But there's definitely, like, you can see, I would love to. This is one of those rare cases where I'm like, I would actually love to see a follow-up to this. Someone produce something, someone of a, I don't know, someone who's got the money and time and the willingness to go harder in investigating the group and that in particular that family behind the schools and everything, and just fucking go after them. You know what I mean? Because they couldn't. I don't think these are the people for it. And this was a very, like, boots on ground, like, here's our story, here's our chance to have our say and tell you, like, the fucked up shit we went through and to get something back for our lives. And that was really good for this doco, and that's what stands out about this. But at the same time, when it ends, you're like, fuck, I would love, like, some doco filmmaker who's got it to go,
who's got some legal representation.
Yeah. Legal representation and the money and everything to just go. Yeah,
because obviously the scale of it just grows exponentially as the series goes on. So I think my only critique is there's some people that they talk to I wish they'd followed up on. Like, they talk to one of the den mothers, like, in a diner for a period, and, like, they're kicked out of the diner, but then you never see her again. It's like, why didn't you just ask her to go meet up somewhere else, you know? Can we come to your house and finish this conversation, you know, that kind of thing. But maybe, you know, she was just uncomfortable and that kind of thing. But just some of the messed up things, and, like, you hear, like, them actually confronting, like, some of the people who are involved and, like, calling them up, or, like, one of them has become a preacher or whatever, and, like, going in and seeing them and in their church or whatever is, like, pretty confronting, like, but, you know, harsh things to watch as well, or listen to at least. Watch the program Cons, Cults, and Kidnapping. It's on Netflix. Dylan, you've also watched another documentary series that's got a fair bit of attention. Can I Tell You a Secret?
Can I Tell You a Secret? This was an interesting one. So it, like, focuses on three women who all have the same sort of thing happen to them, which is that they get a message from someone who's like, hey, and they sound like they're always different. Like, for example, one of them was someone who, and all three women, I guess, a connecting thing, I guess, for them is they're highly online. They're, you know, very active on Instagram, whatever, and stuff. Some of them are models, some of them just influencer sort of lifestyle stuff. Important because, like, that leads to people having so much information for them, which is, again, I don't feel like this documentary does the right thing. It doesn't paint that as a negative, like, victim blaming them. However, it's important for, I think, the understanding how these things happen and, like, the risk, I guess, that having an active lifestyle can sort of take if people choose to do things like this, which is someone, like, for example, one of the girls is like, message, hey, someone, I love your modeling photos, like, this woman, can I get some tips, blah blah blah. They start talking and then it's like, hey, can I tell you a secret? And everyone always starts with, hey, can I tell you a secret? And then it just spirals from there into like saying they know them and they got this thing and their friend's doing this, and then these secret profiles are pretending to message their friends as their other friends, and it just becomes this whole elaborate thing of fake profiles and messaging people. And even one of the girls is like she says, like, it's someone made the person made a fake profile of her and was like messaging one of her friend's dads and was like flirting with him, and he actually thought it was her and was playing along, and that's like really, yep, that's a thing. But yeah, it's just like one of these deep holes of like how people can get this much information is crazy. And what happens to them, but what do you do? And as this doco points out, most of the women went to the cops. Cops were like, yeah, nah, there's nothing, no big deal. Like, it's nothing. This is a nothing story. And like a lot of these, Netflix has done a few docos on this, like pretty much that show the law, or like the training that I think police are given in every country in the world, is not up to standard for what I think how to deal with like cybercrime and cyberbullying and stuff like that. And this is another really good example of it, I think. The who, the what, why, you'll have to watch yourself, but I mean, there's not really a good who, what, why. I would put it that way. But yeah, right. It was two episodes, pretty solid. Yeah, doesn't overstay its welcome. Two episodes is fine.
Yeah. How long are the episodes?
Hour.
Why not just make it a movie?
No idea.
Yeah, weird Netflix decisions. All right. And then you also watched the latest Hannah Gadsby special, Gender Agenda.
Yeah, this is good. This is Hannah Gadsby comes out and like introduces it. It's like she's hosting this a collection of other comedians and stuff, but it's very funny when it starts and then goes directly into pretty much like, hey, yeah, it's pretty awkward when, you know, like, hey, Netflix did this. They work closely with someone who likes to, like, you make a lot of transgender jokes and stuff like that. And I may have said some things to my Netflix representative once, but, you know, like, so I think paints a picture of this whole thing definitely came out of, it's that awkward thing of, I think people were going after her as well on Twitter and similar of LGBTQ comedians who are on Netflix because of the Dave Chappelle stuff. Like, why are you partnered with Netflix when Dave Chappelle? And very much this is just set up with, and you don't need the full true story or whatever. Like, I think the jokes play into enough, which is, it's very obvious this came out of her being like, he's a fuckhead. What are you doing for me? And then they're like, hey, do you want to put on your own show where you can pick who's there and you can spotlight some talent? And she was like, fine. Like, I think that's sort of how this came out. So every single person I watched in this, I have no idea who any of them are. Never seen any of them at all, which isn't a bad thing. That's obviously the idea of this, is to spotlight comedians that you may have never seen before. All very good, very different. Lots of not only like a wide spectrum of I guess sexuality or whatever you want to call it, or gender identity, but also like comedian like styles. Like, you've got sort of your atypical, sort of more in line, like telling stories about what they've been through. To one of them was like a very dry, like this American comedian, I can't remember which one it was, but very dry, like, delivery and everything like that, which I thought was quite different for the rest of the group. Yeah, so I would suggest watching it. I thought it was very funny. A wild mix of stuff. Happy to have more of these sorts of things put together. If they're going to keep fucking platforming Dave Chappelle, they should at least balance the weight, balance the scales, you know.
All right. Well, that's everything that we watched this week. Let's move into film and TV news. And, of course, the big story of the week is the Academy Awards happened on the weekend, on Monday for us here in Australia. Unsurprisingly, anybody, Best Picture, Oppenheimer. Oppenheimer doing very well, picking up 7 awards off the top of my head out of the 11 it was nominated for. I think that's right. but, yeah, Dylan, you haven't watched the entire show, but what are your thoughts on this year's Academy Awards?
Based on what I've watched so far, which is... I had to work yesterday, that's why I've not watched it. I had it on in the background, but and I've watched the highlights.
I think you set it up on like multiple screens, right?
Yeah. I'm really bringing it. Also, everyone at work had no idea what it was and had zero interest in it. And, you know, the best thing about being the boss is I have the power. yous are watching what I want to watch today, so... Shut the fuck up. I really enjoyed it for what I've seen so far based on the winners. I've enjoyed like some of the presenters and stuff. I'd say I don't like anything to do with Jimmy's hosting, would be my
I think he was fine. No.
I have not liked a single, based on what I've watched so far, I didn't like his opening monologue. I haven't liked any of his real, yeah, no, he just, yeah, I don't know, very old school hosting.
Yeah, I think he was, you know, just trying to move things along. Obviously, you know, he came out every bit and trying to set up things. You know, he did set up the John Cena bit, which I thought was one of the most memorable.
That was the only, Yeah, so I think that's as far as I've got is up to like John Cena. I think that's the last thing I watched. Yeah,
and I did enjoy his talk about the unions and like how, you know, it was great. Everybody worked together to try and get through the thing, except for the directors who caved straight away. You know, that was a good bit.
But then you've got jokes like, animated movies. Did you get your kids to vote? These movies, I'll go for too long. You know, like I'll just
it's pretty standard fare. You know, I think you know what this is fourth or fifth time is hosted. So
yeah, maybe I'm just getting sick of it.
Yeah, maybe you know it's time for a change, and a lot of people have put forth who they want to host next year's Academy Awards, based on this year's Academy. With John Mulaney getting a lot of
John Mulaney yet.
Okay. You haven't watched his bit?
No.
Where he's presenting for sound, and pretty much talks about how important sound is. You know, otherwise we wouldn't get iconic lines like, you know, we need a bigger boat, or he was there when my mom was studying spiders in the Amazon. And then proceeds to go through a long rambling explanation of Field of Dreams.
Sure.
As he does. So yeah, here's everybody's pick, but also he would have been my pick after his job at the Governor Awards earlier in the year that everybody was pretty big fan of. Did you see any other presenters in your highlights package that, you know, Dari enjoyed?
Presenters? I like the five people presenter thing on paper. I don't know if it works out well in execution because I feel like it's like a really slowed down flow having five people speak to singular people. I just prefer the one, like the last year. I think it should just I maybe old school mentality, but like just the whoever won last year, you do it right. That's part of winning. You have to
I think it's interesting. I think, you know, it was very nice, and obviously highlighting the actors. I suspect there would be an argument of like, why do these roles get highlighted more than any other individual during the ceremony? You know,
Why don't we have five? Like, why
the
up there?
Why are we elevating the acting awards over everybody else? But yeah. I guess it's a case of like those are the big names. That's what's the star power elements. I don't know. I feel like it's also. I feel like the people nominated didn't enjoy it the most as well, because, you know, actors notoriously don't love getting praised.
They hate getting praised.
Well, certain actors, like, especially publicly, you know, in this format, you know.
So I'll say I want that to just go. I don't hate it. I just think I'm like,
maybe
not again. It's also led to this year's biggest drama has been around, but pretty much caused because there was five people on stage. Like the fucking this person didn't shake this person's hand, they're fucking Robert Downey Jr.'s racist, Emma Stone's now racist as well, all this fucking shit. I'm like, maybe if you just had one presenter we wouldn't have had these issues, right?
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. The Robert Downey Jr. one, I think, you know, Robert Downey Jr. I feel like is also clock, you know, he's only got a certain amount of time to talk. There's five people there. He's got his eyes straight on. I can't remember
I'm going to tell you what it is right now. Here's for every single person that this drama has started, because all of it's bullshit, right? I'm going to say that right now. It's bullshit. None of these people have done anything, right? A, they're on a timer. They're on a clock. B, half of them are drunk by the time they get their awards. And C, they're a mixture of emotions. They're either like really trying to keep it together and be proud.
Even if you're Robert Downey Jr., who's won everything on the way through.
Yeah, but you're still
it's still a massive achievement.
Yeah, okay. And everyone like keeps pointing, like Cillian Murphy took time to shake everyone's hands. Okay, but he's British. No, he's Irish, right? He's European. Yeah. All these fucking Americans don't know how to understand.
He didn't want to do a big speech.
He was happy to use that time. I'm sick of fucking speaking.
As soon as they play me off, I'll be so happy.
Yeah. I just want to suck my. I want to shake the hands. I want to piss off Bradley Cooper more, and then I want to fucking leave. Right, that's all I want to do. I want to shake hands and leave. Well, I'm telling you right now, all this fucking bullshit. That's the only thing I'll say right now. As soon as I saw it all, it's like, oh, fucking racist, blah blah blah. This. I'm like, I'm telling you. One presenter, problem solved, because it's not these people's fault. I understand they're drunk, they're high, they've got a mixture of emotions, they forget.
I don't think they're high. Definitely not high. Don't make that joke.
Well, oh, Emma Stone, Robert Downey Jr. was definitely not higher. Emma Stone may have been higher. She's allowed to be. She hasn't got caught yet.
No.
Yeah, so that's fine. That's the yeah, because I can't believe the amount of drama that's come out of this. It's crazy.
But I mean, it's just the two dramas, right? It's like Robert Downey
Jr. Open Twitter, I've got people like slowing down clips of eye contact and shaking hands and being like, ha, he hates him. He's a fucking, he hates Asian people, you know, like and this. And then I scroll down and there's some woman on TikTok being like, Kate fucking photoshopped the address. The kids aren't real. I'm like, what is happening on the internet this week?
Yeah, that's true. I enjoyed it. I think there's some fun moments. I don't know if you haven't watched the Best Actor be presented, but
I've not.
The best is Nicolas Cage talking about Paul Giamatti's process of he was wearing a lazy eye contact every single day on set, meaning he was half blind. And Nicolas Cage is like, "Would I have done it? Hell yes, but I appreciate you for actually doing it yourself as well." You know, so some of the pairings were very good, but some of the other pairings were like, this person's just reading on a cue. It's not personal in any way, you know. So it's a little bit. It's a tough thing because the people on stage need to be Oscar winners themselves, but they also need to have some sort of personal.
Because out of the ones I've caught, and some of these I haven't got up to watching. Like sometimes I'd stop to quickly watch the presenters at work, and then like as soon as I heard who is one, I walked off and went back to actually doing work.
Yeah.
The Kate McKinnon one.
Yes,
that was really good. Her funny bit with
Kate McKinnon, America Ferrera.
Yeah, about
Steven dinosaurs. Spielberg.
Yeah,
what a great actor. Put him in something.
Yeah, yeah. So that was good. What else did I watch out of context? I haven't watched. Oh, I watched the. Couldn't help but watch the full Andras Ken performance. I've watched that twice. I haven't even got up to it in my actual proper watch.
You just needed to watch it immediately. I watched it
twice out of context. Yeah.
I think one also, of the Martin best.
Also, Martin Scorsese on Twitter with his daughter recording him.
French. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic performance. Obviously, the Bing that everybody was kind of looking forward to watching this year. Incredible that they made it a big thing. Obviously, like a big production number that they don't really do anymore at the Academy Awards. I mean, last year they had the RRR team on stage, like doing a dance, but it wasn't like 60, 70 people choreographed performance. But, you know, obviously they made it a special moment because I doubt Ryan Gosling is going to be performing I'm Just Ken live anytime soon, ever again. Like, in my mind, this is the first time he's ever done it live. And, like, yeah, it was really cool. And obviously, you know, it's fun. As I joked on Twitter, you know, this is, he went down and got, you know, Greta and America and Margot to sing along with him. And then he got Emma Stone to sing a line as well. And it's crazy that, you know, Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling sang I'm Just Ken at the Oscars, but they never sang Sea of Stars from La La Land. You know, bullshit. So that was a lot of fun. Obviously, great moment. A weird one for me is the song from the Killers of the Flower Moon. It kind of just went straight into it after they showed the Killers of the Flower Moon Best Picture.
Okay, I'm seeing that
montage
one.
Thing. Didn't really address who was performing or anything. I don't know whether I missed like a title card coming up or something. But
the people of Osage Nation.
I don't know. I don't recall seeing anything and saying anything about it. It just kind of dived straight into it. And I don't know if it was I don't know if it was just the Channel 7 telecast, but they kind of cut off the Zone of Interest Best Picture montage thing from out of the ad break. It was just as soon as it came from the ad break, because of his like fucking speech, Sandra Hula.
Right? They didn't upload his speech on YouTube. Has that been fixed yet? I haven't looked.
No. So
okay, it says but, I just googled it. Who sung it? I see a couple of articles that say Osage Nation shined at Oscars with song performance. So yeah.
So the Zone of Interest thing, which is obviously getting a lot of attention, apparently it's a rights issue as to why it hasn't been uploaded why it hasn't been uploaded to the Academy Awards YouTube page. They have the rights to like 10 categories, but it has been uploaded to like the official ABC who posted the telecast, YouTube and that kind of stuff. So it is very widely viewable, and a bunch of other places have like uploaded the video whether legally or not. So, I mean, it's not like they're trying to hold back showing this speech. Although I could understand why, you know, maybe you would upload it and turn the comment section off.
I'm loving the, I miss the, see, to me, I know people hate it, but of course I love it because I'm, you know, big SJW. But I love when the Oscars are like a bit more people up there fucking talking about some shit other than just thanking God and their publicists. So between this year, like him getting up, speaking about that, the thing about like making more movies for with the money, the Mark Ruffalo on the red carpet yelling about.
Well, to be clear, Claude Jefferson, because we didn't talk about it on this podcast, Claude Jefferson went on stage and said, you know, studios, instead of making $200 million features, they should make like $10 million features, all that kind of stuff. Give more opportunities for people like Cole Jefferson to make movies, which I think, you know, is a sentiment you can get behind.
Use your time to use your time and platform for something
so
that you care about.
That was them, and also the director of 20 Days in Mariupol was like, I'm one of the few directors up here that wish I didn't make my movie or didn't have to make my movie on it happily. Handing in for Russia to have not invaded the Ukraine and kind of addressed the Ukraine war and that kind of stuff. Yes, a lot of fantastic speeches. Of course, Devine Joy Randolph gave a very lovely, heartwarming speech at the opening of the show. Great way to kick the show off. I think, you know, a lot of the crowd, I think, you know, yeah, some really good speeches. You know, Christopher Nolan obviously winning for Best Director finally, and kind of like, you know,
haven't watched his yet.
Haven't got to seeing yet. Like kind of like him talking. He talks about, you know, how it was great. It feels how special it was is to him to be included in the club, I guess, or like to feel like his work is of value or something like that along those lines. Is like kind of,
well, he's coming out of being. It's funny because he's like he was a comic book director for like, what, 10 years of his life.
Yeah, and but then also, like, you know, also in the context of like the mystique, I guess, around him has kind of been pulled a little bit, like with him talking about how much he loves the Fast and Furious movies and like some of the, like, he's not just some aristocratic.
He's not a weird not a weird dude sitting in the corner who only likes like art house films and listening to fucking orchestra music and play it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was really good. One other critique I have, like the formatting of the show was several times they would do like back-to-back awards, which I'm sure helped with like with the same hosts, which I'm sure helped with like the pacing of the show, where you don't have to introduce another presenter pairing. But it always felt like the second award was getting kind of short shrift, because the first award that they'll present would get this big like lead in and like talk about how it's important, and then it's like, and here's this other award. You know, they could have just put a little bit more stuff in between.
The only one I've seen that was doubled so far was the hair and production design, which both went to the same team anyway, so she should have just called them out at the same time. Like, hey, you want hair, you want for production design, come on.
Tosh, everybody needs their own moment. Other fantastic moment was Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito presenting and talking about the reason they're both up presenting together is because they both try to beat up Batman.
Yeah, so I saw this. I haven't watched it in context yet, but all I saw was a picture, and then people were just pointing out that, like, technically this means that Arnie is like, George Clooney, you're dead to me, and Michael Keaton was actually Batman.
That was my thought in the room. I thought the bit was going to be, there's Batman. No, wait, there's Batman. But no, it was just Michael Keaton. So
they're like, no, there's only one Batman now. So
there's only one, the Batman. It's just Danny DeVito's delivery of "he threw me out a window." Just very funny. You should watch the full clip.
I will. I'll get to it. I'm gonna finish the show.
Yeah. One other fantastic presenting pairing was Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling, who made fun of like the Barbenheimer rivalry. Which Emily Blunt points out wasn't much of a rivalry because, you know, Oppenheimer kept winning all the awards. But that led into a montage. Dedicating them to stunts.
I look up, I see this montage. I see it cut back to them two on stage. I had to keep walking because I was doing something. But then I just quickly messaged the group chat to ask you, because I knew you and Buddy were presumably watching it. But did they just fucking show a montage to not announce that they're adding? Because I was like, there's no way. Surely they didn't just show a montage and be like, man, thank the stump people. Still not getting an award, yeah, though.
That was it. I mean, that would have been... it felt like it was the perfect setup to announce, yeah, hey, we're working towards introducing a stunts category. Yeah. Even just say working towards.
We really didn't even need to say... really appreciate everything you're doing. Really appreciate it. Not that much.
Fuck. They should have just said, and we're going to... we appreciate stunts in our new movie, The Fall Guys, coming blah, blah, blah. At least that would have made even more sense than just this random appreciation of stunts montage. Very weird.
Very weird.
But great chemistry, and I'm looking forward to The Fall Guys because those two are good together. Yeah. Other thing that's getting a lot of attention online, the In Memoriam section.
Oh, really? I haven't
seen this. Well, no, so... obviously, can be quite controversial every single year based on who is in it and what kind of things that is. I think it was odd this year they decided to not only have the In Memoriam going at the time, but also have interpretive dances performing at, like, dancing on stage while the In Memoriam's going, and then to end the In Memoriam with just a bunch of names on the screen. Of people who weren't previously highlighted during the package, it seems. You couldn't tell because they're doing the names come up on a wide shot. So there's no way you could actually read the names that are on the screen. It just felt, yeah. I mean, I think the music choice was fine. I think how they presented the actual people that they chose to highlight the In Memoriam was very good, but there was some, like, they didn't need these added distractions, I feel like. And obviously, it wasn't shot very well, you know. So, yeah. Obviously, some people are getting quite upset about that. And, like, obviously, you know, the people they want highlighted were not highlighted and that kind of thing. So, yeah, that was an odd one. I also felt like there was a number of, like, little technical glitches during the show, whether it's, like, the presenting... some of the, like, the audio would go off at certain points, and, like, some of the timing of the presenters coming out was a little bit off and that kind of stuff. I'm sure that that's, like, stuff you can't really rehearse for and that kind of thing, but...
live show.
Yeah. It's a live show. Also, it's interesting to note that the show was delayed by, like, 5-10 minutes so people could get to the actual ceremony, because there was obviously a protest being held that kind of delayed a lot of people being able to come to the ceremony. And yeah, I mean, the other big flub of the night was the announcement of Best Picture.
But Al Pacino said it wasn't his fault. He said
said that the choice to not announce, to not rename the 10 nominees was a choice by the producers.
Yep.
His delivery of the line of the name of the winner is totally his fault, and that is what people are more upset about. I don't know. He's trying to point out a problem that nobody was complaining about, really, and trying to make it that's what you're all upset about, right? That we didn't announce all the nominees again, which was an odd choice, especially given that the Jimmy Kimmel pretty much came out and said we're running under. Trying to vamp it a little bit at the end to try and make sure they hit their time. Why they wouldn't just have a package? I guess they just expected to be running long and just, you know, didn't feel like they needed to reiterate the nominees. But yeah, very anticlimactic end to the evening, with Al Pacino just, I don't know what he was going for there.
Best Picture.
My eyes see Oppenheimer.
My eyes see Oppenheimer.
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 Why is nobody reacting?
Everyone was like, is this a joke? My eyes see Oppenheimer. But my body! And my head is telling me something different.
I'm in the position of power, and I say the winner is Godfather Part 3.
Yeah.
I don't know. All right. On the actual winners front, obviously, a lot of expected winners. Cillian Murphy, Robert Downey Jr., Divine Joy Randolph. But there were some upsets or, like, highly contested awards. Obviously, The Boy and the Heron won Best Animated Film. Hayao Miyazaki not there to accept. Of course, because
who the fuck would expect him to be?
Who would expect an old Japanese man to fly halfway across the world to maybe win an award? You know, at his age, which, you know, he
never flew across for the first one in 2001. No, or
whatever it was. I don't know if he's actually been to America that much. I've read a report that, you know, the only time he went to see a dub is because Lauren Bacall was going to be there, so he's like, I want to be at that.
Let me tell you something I can say with utmost confidence, having never met the man. That man does not like America.
Yeah. That's probably...
I feel pretty confident in saying that.
Pretty confident. Other interesting wins. Zone of Interest won for Best Sound, which I don't think many people saw coming.
Yeah, I'm saying it, sorry.
Well, it's because that movie is very quiet, and the sound category has been known historically for being awarded to films with a lot of action and explosions and, you know, cars and that kind of stuff. More obvious uses of sound and that kind of thing. So that was a surprise. And obviously it being a foreign language, I guess, film as well. Other big surprise, Godzilla Minus One won Best Visual Effects. Great for Godzilla. First Academy Award for Godzilla in its long storied franchise history. Several people pointed out he's 70 years old and he's finally won his first Academy Award. So congrats to Godzilla.
You're never too old, you know?
You are never too old. And then the other kind of divisive one is Emma Stone winning Best Actress, which is kind of been the one that blown up the internet. And has been the most divisive win of the night, I would say.
Yeah. That racist bitch. How dare she?
She didn't do anything.
She did it on purpose. First she takes away from the fucking... First she pretends she's Hawaiian and Asian. And then she takes from the Native American.
Yeah, poor Emma Stone, you know. She just seems like a lovely person, and the Academy Awards just keeps, and casting directors just keep putting in chair positions. But yeah, I mean, that was everything. I mean, my other little notes, I loved Anatomy of a Fall winning Best Original Screenplay, and then coming up to the steel drum version of PIMP, that's from the movie.
Apparently songs in the movie, so I hear.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Instrumental version, apparently.
Yeah, so overall, very good show. Oscar predictions. Obviously, we do our predictions every year. I usually win. I'm not going to gloat much this time, because this year was the closest Oscar predictions we've ever done.
Thought I'd finally try, you know?
I mean, I was... I thought Barbie would win way more awards than it did, but apparently everybody was very in love with Poor Things, which obviously carried through to helping. I feel like that was kind of the distinguishing, probably, in that race. Like, everybody really loved Poor Things and maybe did not love Killers of the Flower Moon as much.
I haven't even watched Poor Things, and I voted it for more than you.
Yeah, that was the thing. So I thought Barbie, but no. So that was where I lost a lot of points. Dylan lost points on thinking Jodie Foster would win Best Supporting Actress and Lily Gladstone would win Best Actress, and Oppenheimer and
Emma Stone also thought screenplay. That Gladstone would win.
Yeah, I mean, everybody. Yeah. So that's it. So I finished on 15 correct nominate predictions and Dylan on 14 out of the 23 categories. So
fucking Jodie Foster, I think that's, fucks me, I this, think. I could have tied you up if I hadn't taken that wild swing. That was my one Pepsi sponsored vote, and that's where
that was your wildest swing. Yeah, that was my wildest swing. That and I'm just Ken, gonna beating Billie Eilish. You know. Comedy songs historically do not, you know.
True. I would have loved it.
So
Ryan Gosling.
It would have been fantastic to be like, see.
I don't deserve to win this, but sure, guys.
Absolutely. That's the Academy Awards, obviously, with Christopher Nolan finally winning Best Director. So that leads in this week's top three.
Definitely in the top three.
This week's top three is top three directors who still need to win a Best Directing Academy Award. Because people have long been kind of championing Christopher Nolan to win. Ever since back in The Dark Knight, I feel like, to win Best Director. And he finally did it on this one. Everybody can debate whether this is the one he should have won it for, but, you know, he's finally done it. So now we're going to do top three directors who still need to win Best Director, the Best Directing Academy Award. Till almost number three.
Number three, Paul Thomas Anderson. There will be blood if this man does not inherit a vice of an Academy Award so he can Boogie Night it down.
Licorice pizza.
Licorice pizza.
Alright. My number three, Denis Villeneuve. I think, obviously, he's the next, arguably the second biggest director in the world right now. So he's probably going to be the next one that people kind of champion. Obviously, there'll be a lot of, you know, push on the back of Dune 2 to try and win him one next year. Whether it actually happens or not, we'll see. But yeah, I feel like he's probably one of the younger directors that people will be pushing to win an Academy Award. Dylan, what's your number two?
Spike Lee. And Spike Lee winning an Academy Award is highly dependent on, I think, who's voting and how
timing
and what sort of movie it is. Because when he puts out something like BlacKkKlansman, that's the sort of movie I feel like he's in a lot of chances to win. But then something like The Five Bloods is a lot harder for him to, I think, win. So it's sort of, I think you got to have timing in the year and stuff like that. So, I mean, a lot of people would say he should have won for, Do the Right Thing was the one that I think most people would say he should have won for. But yeah, Spike Lee, I'd say.
Okay. My number two is Quentin Tarantino. So apparently he's only got one more shot. You know, but obviously a director who's made a heap of fantastic movies probably should have won at some point. So hopefully with his next one, with The Critic, maybe he wins it. I don't know. We'll see. Dylan, what's your number one?
Quentin Tarantino. Man's got one movie, apparently. Come on. Do you want to live in a world where Quentin Tarantino never got a directing Oscar? We live in a world where Al Pacino, not Al Pacino, fucking hell, Alfred Hitchcock never got a director Oscar. So, you know, do we want to live in the same world?
I don't know. I feel like Quentin Tarantino would be all right. But, you know, as much as I said, you know, he should. I think he would also be, he would be okay with the narrative that, you know, he won the Best Directing Academy Award. You know? So, my number one, David Fincher. You know, long list of fantastic movies. Probably should have won for Social Network. You know, The Killers was still very good, even though it was very not even close. You know, he just needs to actually make some movies. That's the thing. Lately, you know, don't get caught up in too much television. Just make some cool movies. That would be a thing. So yeah, bunch of men.
True.
That's true.
Women only started directing recently.
Yeah. Well, I feel like the obvious choice right now is Greta Gerwig. Like, she's the biggest female director
now. I feel like she's her career getting started.
She's like very early in her career. She's very young. She's got a lot of time to win an Academy Award. So there's no right. Yeah. All the prominent female directors, I feel like, of still well in the early to mid stages of the career, so they got plenty of time. All right, let's move into giving some thumbs to trailers. Of course, you'll find all the trailers we're about to talk about in the show notes below. All right, we're kicking things off with Ripley, created by Stephen
Zelle. Get away from her, you bit. No, sorry, never mind.
Starring Andrew Scott, Johnny Flynn, and Dakota Johnson. In 1960s New York, Tom Ripley is hired by a wealthy man to convince his wayward son to return home from Italy, but Tom's introduction to Dickie Greenleaf's leisurely life abroad is the first step into a complex life of deceit, fraud, and murder. Phil, what do you think of this trailer for Ripley?
Double thumbs up, looks fantastic, can't wait. Black and white? Hell yeah. I think there's a lot of inspired choices in this, actually. But also TV series, I think, sort of. Considering, like, I don't think they've only been movie adaptations before. Including yep. The Talented Mr.
Ripley. Talented Mr. Ripley.
So I think this, and yeah, I feel like the casting of Andrew Scott, just, I don't know, that character, so there's like four or five books or whatever. I don't know. Something about, like, when I think back and go, man, they had Matt Damon play this dude. Nah, he didn't look sinister enough. Fucking Andrew Scott. Yeah, he's a serial killer. You know what I mean? Like.
Yeah, I'll give it two thumbs up as well. Obviously, I'm very unfamiliar with the property. I've never watched The Talented Mr. Ripley. Or am familiar with any other adaptation.
So, without spoiling it, because I've watched like two of the other movies. Although the other one I only watched like at My Nan and Pops, one of the old adaptations. I think it's like five adaptations. I've watched The Talented Mr. Ripley and I've watched one of the old ones. I think there's like four or five books, but it's like an anti-detective story where it's like the lead character of the books was always like the bad guy. And like sort of like it's that thing of it's like you should be rooting for him to get caught, but somehow he manages to not, just between books. If that, it's like, so it was the continuing adventures of like the bad guy instead of like this, the detective.
Yes. So that makes sense that this would be something people would be involved in or want to watch, given some of the bigger shows and movies, almost talked about shows and movies, you know, something like a You or Saltburn, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, looks fantastic. Andrew Scott is pretty much great in everything he does. So
Dakota Fanning,
I haven't seen her in something in a while.
Not like this. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So this is coming to Netflix on the 4th of April. Next trailer is for Inside Out 2, directed by Kelsey Mann, starring Amy Poehler, Phyllis Smith, Lewis Black, Diane Lane, Kyle MacLachlan, Tony Hale, Liza Lapira, Maya Hawke, Aya Edeberry, Adele Exarchopoulos, Paul Walter Hauser, and Kensington Tolman. Inside Out 2 returns to the mind of newly minted teenager Riley, just as headquarters is undergoing a sudden demolition to make room for something entirely unexpected. New emotions. Joy, sadness, anger, fear, and disgust, who have long been running a successful operation by all accounts, aren't sure how to feel when anxiety shows up and it looks like she's not alone. Dylan, what do you think of this trailer for the sequel to Inside Out?
I'm going one up, one down. It looks fine. I don't know if it's going to carry the same quality that the first one had. Like, the first one just sort of came out of nowhere and was like such a weird idea, and it just worked and really hit it out of the park and like emotionally hit all adults that watched it, I think, because they understood like the story. But this one, I don't know, at least based on the trailer, I'm just gonna go one up, one down.
I gave it two thumbs up. I think it looks really good. I think it's very telling that it's set during a teenage character's, you know, time period, introducing a bunch of emotions that are very specific to becoming a teenager, with, you know, it appears anxiety kind of the big bad. You
that
know,
bitch never leaves, though.
I mean, for some people, that bitch never leaves. In some cases, that bitch wins. You know? But it's interesting, like, people have pointed out, like, little things, like, you see all the adults and, like, none of the new emotions are in any of their, like, control rooms. It's like, oh, they're, like, these main emotions overcome, like, them during your teenage years, and, like, for most people, I guess. Yeah, I think it looks really good. Everybody's freaking out because there's a Easter egg to turning red in the trailer. Because she's got a Four Town poster on the wall. So all the conspiracy theorists who think all the Pixar movies are connected are like going crazy. I think it looks really good. A lot of the fun voices. Looks like it'll be a good time. Just, you know, I'm here for embarrassment, you know. That's the emotion I vibe with the most.
You hate secondhand awkward. Embarrassment, though.
Yeah, because I feel that experience. You know. Inside Out 2 is coming soon on the 13th of June. Next trailer is for Sing Sing, directed by Greg Cuda, starring Colman Domingo, Clarence Macklin, Sean San Jose, and Paul Racy. A small group of prisoners inside Sing Sing Correctional Facility, one of the world's most infamous maximum security prisons, attempts to stage their own original production of Breaking the Mummy's Code. Tim, what did you think of the trailer for Sing Sing?
Three thumbs up.
That's all the thumbs.
All thumbs. Colman Domingo wins his Oscar for this one.
I mean, potentially. It looks very good. Like, on the back of... good timing, you know. He's up for Rustin this week.
Mm.
Did win it, but definitely capture his attention. Yeah. Really interesting, obviously based on a true story. I think the film is actually based on two books from what I saw. And two of the leads are from actually people who were in the program.
Oh, really? I didn't. Okay.
Yeah. So obviously the main dude that he's trying to get to become part of the program. Mm. That's like, yeah, I nailed Hamlet. Shakespeare was turning over his grave.
Yeah,
he is actually credited as himself from what I saw on the Wikipedia page.
Oh yeah, I can see. Yeah.
So that's very interesting. Paul Racy, first kind of big role that I've seen him in, or like prominent role that I've seen him in since Sound of Metal. So that's really cool. And yeah, Colman Domingo looks really good. I think it's going to be a really strong, uplifting story about, you know, people who have done wrong trying to find peace or creativity.
On IMDb, it says that the real John Divine G. Whitfield, who he's playing, is also in the movie. It doesn't say what role he plays, but it says he's an actor in it.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
spoilers, he gets out.
Oh, shocker. So yeah.
There's a short documentary with that dude who says Clarence Macklin, who's it's credited as playing himself. Short documentary he was in called Unlocked: The Power of Arts in Prison, about 10 people who did that program and everything.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting. Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. Well, very fascinating. So, Sing Sing coming to US cinemas sometime in July. No Australian release date. Shocker. Next trailer is for The Wild Robot, directed by Chris Sanders, starring Lupita Nyong'o, Pedro Pascal, Kit Connor, Bill Nighy, Stephanie Hsu, Mark Hamill, and Catherine O'Hara. The epic adventure follows the journey of a robot, Rosum Unit 7134, ROS for short, that is shipwrecked on an uninhabited island and must learn to adapt to the harsh surroundings, gradually building relationships with the animals on the island, becoming the adoptive parent of an orphan gosling. Tell them, what did you think of the trailer for The Wild Robot?
I'm going one up, one down. I like the animation, I like the style and everything. But yeah, very like teaser trailer-ish, just like sets a tone, doesn't like get me much to grab onto. But yeah, I'm keen to find out more.
Yeah, I'll go one up, one down as well. I think everything is fantastic about it. I love, you know, the silence of it. I think the most jarring thing for me is this is a trailer that is mostly silent or like no dialogue. And you've got a bunch of creatures that you would assume would have no dialogue. And then you end the trailer with a bunch of actor names. It's like, what roles are they filling, you know? Because it doesn't seem like, you know. I feel like the trailer is also like riffing on a bunch of other like robot or like movies or content, obviously giving big Iron Giant vibes, you know, Obviously, he looks a little bit like Eve and Wally and that kind of stuff. So, obviously, playing on, you know, things we've seen before. But yeah, it looks really good, beautifully, really interestingly animated and that kind of stuff. Interesting tidbit I read while researching. This will be the last DreamWorks movie that they, like, produce completely in-house. Like, a lot of their future projects will be, like, contracted work outside of DreamWorks. So, yeah, that's end of an era, weirdly, with this one. From the director of How to Train Your Dragon and Lilo and Stitch and everything. So,
yeah.
Very keen to check this one out. So, this one is releasing in cinemas on the 12th of September. Last trailer for this week, Fallout. Created by Geneva Robertson-Dwott and Graham Wagner, starring Ella Purnell, Aaron Motton, and Walton Goggins. Based on one of the greatest video game series of all time, Fallout is the story of haves and have-nots in a world in which there's almost nothing left to have. 200 years after the apocalypse, the gentle denizens of luxury Fallout shelters are forced to return to the irradiated hellscape their ancestors left behind, and are shocked to discover an incredibly complex, gleefully weird, and highly violent universe waiting for them. Dylan, what do you think of this trailer for Fallout?
I'm going one up, one down. Still, like, it just sets up a world, I guess. But the thing is, I guess, as like, the trailer sets up a world for people who don't know what the game franchise is about. And that's the thing about the trailer. But as someone who understands the world and everything, I'm like, okay, but what's the direction of this particular story? Like, where are we going? Because they've done this, you know, they've talked about how it's not an adaptation of any of the stories or anything. It's just set in the same game universe, but it's about a different vault or whatever. It's like the big thing for this one. So I'm just like, I just need to see a little bit more about, like, what is the overarching story? So they're like, hey, here's a brotherhood dude. Hey, here's Ella Purnell. She's a vault dweller. Here's old mutant fuckface. You know, like, how do we connect all these people? Like, what's the story here? So I'm going one up, one down. That said, if this turns out to be good, which it has the potential to, I feel like Ella Purnell may be the most successful video game actor because she's in the best video game adaptation series of all time, Arcane. And then if this is good, so.
Yeah. But has she won an award? Well, she's won several awards, actually. Never mind. Yeah, I'm going to give it 2 thumbs up. I think this one kind of, I feel like, showed that they were sticking true to the world of the games and that kind of thing. I feel like was very important, and, like, you know, they got all the vibes kind of right. I just, you know, seeing the Brotherhood of Steel, seeing the power suits and that kind of stuff was really cool. Seeing her in the Vault Dweller suits and, like, even, like having it unbuttoned and that kind of stuff, and obviously covered in blood. The crazy robot voiced by Matt Berry that wants to just remove her
insides. I'm going to extract your organs and then take you to New York City.
New York City.
New York City.
I mean, each perfect casting. Walter Goggins looks really good, both as, like, a normal person and then as a ghoul. Yeah, obviously, it just looks like the world, which is, I don't think, is an easy feat. I, you know, just kind of have faith that they'll nail the story, I guess, blind faith at this point. So, yeah, looks fantastic. Very excited to check it out. Fallout is coming to Prime Video from the 11th of April.
And, interestingly, I didn't realize till this trailer. All episodes dropping at once, not week by week.
All episodes dropping at once, which is
weird for Prime.
I mean, they switch between which ones they're going to release weekly and which ones they're just going to drop all at once.
I know.
You would think, I would have thought this one would be one they decided to release weekly, but, you know, I don't know. Dylan, this week, what do you want to watch?
I would love to watch Love Lies Bleeding, which is out this week, but I will not be. So I think out of what I'm going to have access to, my pick would be, Apples Never Fall, the TV series, the mini series we talked about a couple weeks ago, whatever it was.
Yes. When we was did. That?
2-3 weeks ago. That'll be my pick.
All right. Well, I'll also recommend Love Lies Bleeding, which I will be able to see likely.
Just a side note, this podcast, if I ever move to another state, I feel like this segment would lose a lot of its charm. Because currently a lot of it is, hey, here's the things I'd like to watch, but I can't watch it. Like, what happens when I would have more access? You know what I mean? Like, it kind of ruined it.
I mean, then other things on this podcast would improve. Sure. Do you know what I mean? Then on the TV front, I want to check out Population 11, which is a new Stan series.
Is that the one starring old mate from
Ben
Superstore?
Feldman from Superstore.
Yeah.
Set in a town in which there's only 12 people.
When I saw the poster or the press release come through for this, I was like, how the fuck does the dude from Superstore end up in a Stan original Australian series?
I mean, it's also directed by one of the directors of Hacks and Brooklyn Nine-Nine, so I mean,
what a wild,
it's just
like,
them giving a bunch of money to make stuff here in Australia. So yeah, that's what we're excited to watch this week. Let us know what you want to watch this week, or what you thought of the Academy Awards this year, by going to explosion.com/Twitter, or jump to Discord at explosion.com/Discord. If you want to help us out here at What Do You Want to Watch, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or in Podchaser. Leave us 5 stars, and you can leave 5 stars, or just tell people about the show. And if you've enjoyed this episode, thought it was worth a dollar, head on over to our Ko-fi page at explosion.com/support. Thank you very much for listening. Until next time, keep watching stuff, I guess.